All right, this is DanCast episode 75 for what day is it? I don't know. I got to look it up. It is May 16th, 2015. I hope everyone's doing great. I haven't done this for 3 weeks. I've been drinking a little bit, so we're doing this. It is just me tonight. A lovely Saturday night. Looks like it could rain, just so you know what the weather is like around here. We're right at that part of spring, is it? Where it used to be hot, and now it's cold, and now it looks like it's going to rain. So I suppose let's get to my agenda and see what's going on. Okay, let's see here. All right. Jesus Christ. This can't be right. Follow-up? Mr. Joel Franklin, I'm glad to hear his voice again. It's so nice to be able to hear his updates. I'm glad he's getting back in the swing of things. I am, in a way, I admire how busy Joel appears to be. I say appears because I don't know for sure, but it probably is true that he's always got something going on. Three kids, full-time job, a wife, my wife, and man, you know, I feel, what is the word? When I get up at like 6 a.m, I think, another day. And then, but I get to go home at like 5:30 that night. And, but Joel, man, he's a guy, it sounds like he's just going on. Guy's got a full-time job. Because when he's not at work, he's a fucking dad. Plus he's on call. Plus he's a husband. I don't know why people sign up for that. But I admire you, Joel. I think that's a good thing. I think it's good. I think you have integrity. I think you have honor. I think that is a trait that not a lot of people really value that much, you know, especially honor. You know, it's easy, I think, in the 21st century to become cynical about, like, doing things for the right reasons, the noble reasons, and, but Joel's like, I'm a dad, and this is what dads do. And I have a job, and this was people with jobs do. Even when he was back talking about, like, cows and having to, like, reach into a cow's vagina to get, like, the other cow baby, because it was stuck. Joel was the guy. And I've never done that. And here I am with my bullshitty 8:30 to 5 typically job, or 9 to 5 job. And I come home like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired, you guys. And Mr. Joel Franklin's like, yeah, me too. And I've also been doing this for more hours than you. And I can't get any fucking quiet. I got my kids. I love them. But there's a chemical in my brain that keeps me from murdering them. And, if it weren't for that, I don't know where I would be. It's a complete misrepresentation, probably, of Joel's outlook on being a father, on being a husband. So that's just a long-winded way of saying I'm glad to hear his voice. I'm glad that he's back into the podcasting fold. He just released an episode this morning. I intend to listen to it after I get done releasing this episode. Maybe I should have listened to it before, but it's almost 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, and just wanted to get this out and start my evening. My evening's going to be kind of low-key. I haven't had a free evening since Tuesday, and Tuesday I ran. I am doing a show called Crimes of the Heart, and the rehearsals for this show are like a 40-minute drive away, so I'm spending a lot of time in my car these days. This week I had 3 rehearsals, so I had to you know, get out and go down to the rehearsals and then rehearse lines and do that stuff. And I got to commit this stuff to memory soon. And I should be spending time on it during the weekend, but I haven't had a free night since Tuesday. Tuesday, I went running and it was actually very nice. The last time I went running was Sunday, and it was so fucking humid. It was just like, I felt like such a fat piece of shit because my body, I'm like trying to breathe, get that oxygen out of the air, and it's just so tough, and I just couldn't do it. I wanted to do a 5K, and I just couldn't do it because it was so warm, so humid, and I'm drenched, and I just gave up. I went 2 miles. I'm like, fuck this shit. I'm going home. So I've been staying busy with that. I have to play a lawyer, a toilet lawyer. Not a toilet lawyer, a southern lawyer. I have been, I'm not good at accents, I don't think. And relatively speaking, this is a small part in this show, but I still have to get the accent down. I have a problem when I do a southern accent in that out of nowhere, I will switch to a British accent. And I have always wondered, what is it about Southerners, that voice, that accent, that makes it related to the English? Because when you really get down to it, you know, this country, United States of America, was settled by British people. And British people, when you think of it, you think of like aristocratic type British people or English, like, Cockney type people, and then they come to this land and it's all sorts of fuckery with accents, and it's just odd. And I had recently read in some book that Southerners, the people who had settled the South, came from some area of England which was roughneck, I guess you could say, and I get my voice like that, and the sort of people that when they fight you, like a fist to cuffs, you think like bare knuckle boxing, they would grab your balls and squeeze, like that was like the secret, that was their, not even their finishing move, that was how brutal these people were, that wasn't their forward, down, XY, and they rip your spine out. Maybe they rip your spine out. But they would just grab your balls and just squeeze and tug and just pull them down. Just like to, you know, settle things mano a mano. And they talk strange. So that's why Southerners talk like that. So I have to play a role. My trick so far has just been think Kevin Spacey in House of Cards. And Kevin Spacey, he kind of talks like, I need to read something. I can't just think off the cuff. He kind of talks like, that's kind of a Dr. Phil. I don't know what I'm doing with my life. But I've got this show going on, that opens the weekend of June 5th and 6th and 7th. I don't know. It's a Friday and a Saturday, two performances, and then I'm done, and then I'm not doing shit. I'm not doing shit this summer, and I didn't think I was going to do this thing, and then the guy who's directing it, I really admire, so I wanted to be in a show with him, and so here I am, I'm doing a show. What else is new? I did my annual physical, and I haven't done that in two years, so I guess you can't call it an annual physical. And it's strange. I've gotten a little out of shape. I've probably gained like 10 pounds since the last time I did an annual physical, which I'm ashamed of. I'm working on it between exercise and just got to watch what I eat. I had an interesting situation where I was feeling these pains in my body, which is typically where I feel pain. And it was strange because I would get them like during lunchtime, and specifically when I was at work and I had some anxiety or stress, and my body would just tighten up a bit, and then it would just echo through my like stomach and esophagus. So I tell the doctor this, and he's like, okay, well, so do you eat breakfast? And I'm like, no, I typically don't eat breakfast. He goes, okay, so you're typically, you may do a fast between, you know, because that's around like a 16-hour fast. And I had read that this is good. Everything you've been told about eating breakfast was a lie. It's not the most important meal of the day. Breakfast is whenever you eat your first meal of the day. And as part of trying to stay in shape and have caloric restriction, one of the tricks is to skip breakfast, have a cup of coffee with some coconut oil or something in it, and that'll extend your fast until lunchtime. And basically, this doctor said, well, you're fucking hungry. The reason your body is in pain around lunchtime is because you're hungry. And, like, it was even, like, he asked the question to me, like, so when you eat, the pain goes away? I was like, yeah. And I sound like a fucking idiot, I felt like. But this was the year I had gone to my physical and thought, you know, all these dumb questions that I had been putting off, like, just coasting through and just assuming, well, that's not a big deal. Let's ask the doctor about it. Like any sort of dumb thing, like my finger, like the one I cut off, the fingertip I cut off. He had an interesting way of explaining it. And the way he explains things is like, you know how people say, explain it like I'm a 5-year-old? This guy does it. And he does it in a non-insulting way. And it's so great. Like, I asked him about my fingertip. I didn't even ask him. I was like, well, you should be aware, because the last time I saw you was before I cut off my finger tip. And just so you know, it's like a little sensitive. I don't know if it's something we got to take a look at. And he goes, well, when... And the guy basically explained to me how fingertips worked. Like, I didn't know how fingertips work. He goes, well, whoever created us... That's how he said it. Whoever created us has... had put our lots of nerves endings in our fingertips so that when we feel around, it's, you know, we can explore our surroundings more easily that way. And what has happened since you don't have a fingertip is all that's gone. And so, yes, it's going to be a little more sensitive. And because I was like, yeah, doc, tell you fucking what, you know, ever since I lost this fucking finger is if I jam this finger, it hurts like a bitch, doc. That's basically what it came off sounding like. Hurts like a motherfucker, doc. What do you say about that? Well, it's kind of a normal thing. If you do slam your finger into, say, a door, or, you know, someone, it gets jammed somehow. Yes, you're right. It will hurt like a bitch. Because that's the way our creator made us. He made us so that, you know, our fingertips are very fleshy, and they have nerve endings on the end of them, right? So if you don't have that fleshy part of your finger, and your finger gets jammed, yes, it certainly will. It will hurt like a bitch. The other thing that they do now at my health center is they do pre-screenings for depression. So this is when... It's not anything fancy. You come in and it's been a while since you've come, usually, so you have to, you know, update these forms. Is your insurance information correct? Any known drug allergies and, you know, all that shit? And this is the first time I had seen something like, hey, from now on, we pre-screen for depression. So just answer these questions and we'll know if you're fucked up and you should get some help. And they were all like generic questions like, have you ever had sleepless nights? And it's like, yeah, sometimes I have sleepless nights. It's not a lot, but yeah, sometimes I do have sleepless nights. And there was one that was like, have you ever felt bad about do you ever feel like you're letting your family and friends down? It's like, fuck yeah, I feel that a lot. I feel that, you know, sometimes, tell you the truth, Doc, sometimes is the cause of those sleepless nights. You know what the cause of my sleepless nights is? Fucking iPad in bed. I'm positive of it. This past week, I had attempted to stick to a schedule where by 9 o'clock, all screens are off. No TV, no computer, no iPad, no iPhone. That's it. Read a fucking book, and once your eyes start drooping and feeling heavy, get into the bed. Get into bed. And for two nights this week, I did that. It's like 9 o'clock, that's my limit. I'm going to read this book and get tired and go to bed. And I did that for two nights, and then the other nights I was like, I'm just going to stay up a bit longer. And those were the nights I had sleepless nights, when I was watching TV, when I had an iPad in bed, and then watching YouTube videos to go to sleep. It doesn't work. Your fucking body, it sees that light coming from those screens, and the light tells your brain the sun is up and you should be awake. Otherwise, you're going to be eaten by a fucking bear or a lion, and you don't want to go out like that. So it's the way the body saying, you got to tell your body, yo, things are cool. I'm so sophisticated. I'm reading this book. I can go to sleep anytime I want now. And I slept like so well those two nights I did it. So I got to stick to that. It's part of going paleo too. It's if you're into that shit. The people who write these books on the paleo diet, because it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle, you know? And that's one of their big recommendations, is get sleep. No one, don't be ashamed. This is the fucking thing I hate so much. I remember in like high school and colleges, but people going like, yeah, I only got 4 hours of sleep. Well, fucking congratulations. It's not a point of pride that you deprived your body of all this shit that it needs. Like 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Because why? Because you studied, because you were cramming, because you fucked up for 3 months, and now you're trying to make it all up in one night. I don't like people who present that as like a badge of honor. Or like, I'm more devoted to this thing because I spent all night worrying about it. Like, your job is not to worry. Your job is to act. And you cannot act unless you are charged. Unless your body is in a state in which it's at its full capacity, at its full potential to act. So you staying up all night fucking being worried? Congratulations! Because you just wasted that time to recharge your batteries and get your shit in order. So I'm not a big fan of people who I don't like it. Long story short, I don't like it. Otherwise, the only thing the doctor had to say was stuff like, oh, you can't a little heavier. No, he didn't say it like that. He was very clear, like, you know, your BMI is around, 27. And 25 is really good, so we should get it down to 25. So you should watch what you eat, particularly carbs. It was the first time I'd ever heard a doctor like say anything about macronutrients, specifically carbs. And it's everything I had been reading was like carbs. You know, USDA requirements for a long time was like you should get 6 to 11 servings of carbs a day, and now, just recently, it appears like they're finally acknowledging that that shit is poison and you shouldn't eat a lot of it. Meanwhile, here I am drinking fucking bourbon. My Saturday night bourbon. I might even smoke a fucking cigar after I'm done with this as I'm listening to Mr. Joel's podcast. That shit's fine. Just the fucking bread and pasta is what you should watch out for, because that shit will give you a heart attack. Don't you think it's funny that all the people on Sopranos were fucking obese and fat? I'm not funny, but I don't know what you call it. They're Italians. I have met people who, back when I was really into low-carb diets, ketogenic diets, and I'd tell them about it. It was like, oh, I could never do that because I'm Italian. It's like, well, fuck you. You're going to die. The Italian diet, the stereotypical Italian diet, like a lot of pasta, a lot of bread, all that shit, is actually not even Italian. It in Italy, the boots of Europe, they eat a lot of seafood, right? Pasta only entered into the equation when the Italians emigrated to the United States and had no money. And so they worked in this pasta and bread as a huge part of their diet to sustain themselves while they were poor, while they didn't have money. But all the people back home, they're not eating that stuff. They're eating mussels. They're eating seafood. Chicken parmesan. I don't know if that's a mainland Italian thing, but the point is, like, the Italian diet, garlic bread? Did garlic bread even exist before 1900? Tonight I'm going to try grilling some pork chops and have... I got this thing for my grill. You put it on, you put your vegetables on it. So I want to do some asparagus, have some great smelling pea. Great way to end my Saturday night. What else is going on? I watched this Nirvana documentary. It was on HBO. It's called Montage of Heck. It's not even about Nirvana. It's about Kurt Cobain. And it's always an odd thing that to watch this sort of piece. Because, you know, Nirvana, I like Nirvana growing up, and having watched this documentary, I had listened to, which album did I listen to? In Utero. And, it's funny to me, funny, but Kurt Cobain was a guy who didn't want to be as big as, you can tell, didn't want to be as big as the music press made him out to be, and now all of a sudden, you know, he was just some guy in a band who had fucking problems, and then all of a sudden he's the most famous person in the world, I don't know if he's making a ton of money, and, because back then, who knows, but, then he's labeled as like this voice of the generation, which was the Gen Xers and teenage angst, shit like that. And he does drugs and has to deal with addiction. He's got to deal with being a father on top of all this stuff going on in his life. And then someday in, what was it, 1994? Spring of 1994, he shoots himself and puts an end to it. And I remember, you know, being like 12 years old when that happened, and people thinking like, okay, this was our John Lennon, if you could even say that. Guy puts out three albums, you know. No, four. Bleach. I listened to Bleach the other day. Bleach. Insecticide, Nevermind, and In Utero. Is that the chronological order of them? But anyway, it's you watch this documentary. Look it up. It's odd to me how, maybe it's not odd, but I remember how commercialized they had made this band and this guy. People walking around with Nirvana t-shirts, and I think about 10 years ago, they had released this guy's personal diary and his drawings and all this shit out into like a mass market paperback or hardcover. And it's like, here you go, $20. You could have this book of doodles that this guy drew when he was riding on a tour bus or in high school. And it's probably all this messed up stuff. And I feel like this documentary, in a way, is kind of similar to that. But there's also, you know, you should still watch it because there are moments of it where you're like, Jesus Christ, this guy had problems. You know, they do the kind of, when you watch a documentary or even a, you know, just the subgenre of musical documentaries, they have, you know, here's video of this guy as a kid being pure and innocent, and he grows up to be this guy, and man, as an adult, the footage they have of him being a family man, if you could call it that, there's one scene where their daughter, Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain, their daughter has been born, and they're just having a weekend at home, just being, trying to be a family, and they're going to cut the daughter's hair. And she's sitting on Kurt's lap, and Courtney Love is getting ready to cut the hair. And this guy is just totally out of it. Like, he's high. He claims that he's tired when Courtney Love is saying, "Oh, you're high." And he's like, "No, I'm just tired." And, but Jesus Christ. And they all look like shit. They look like fucking shit. I remember when, after he had died, Courtney Love, I think, was on some cover of, maybe even just a whole album cover. And she was, you know, she had like a half-cut shirt, and her belly was showing a little bit of skin, and she's, you know, looking sexy. And there are scenes in this movie where they're like taking a bath, and it's like, ugh, no thanks. But makes you think, like, how your male brain has been calibrated through mass media to these sex objects that don't even fucking exist, you know? And like, everything's been worked and airbrushed and photoshopped, and this was a prime example of it. Like, this couple is just so coked out, or not coked, but I guess Kurt Cobain's choice of drug was heroin. And he had all these blemishes on his face. There's scenes of him in like pajama pants, and he's walking around, and his body just looks fucking poisoned. Like, oh my God. Guy looks like he's got fucking AIDS. That's how bad it is. Like, he looks like he's got an autoimmune deficiency syndrome. And, you know, he's like the most important rock star in the world. And he's doing drugs, and he's ODing, and he's singing these songs to tons of people about how no one likes him. And maybe that's simplifying things, but, you know, I like Nirvana as a band, you know, as a band, but I feel a strange, I have a strange feeling of him being the voice of a generation, particularly the Gen Xers. Is it Gen X? All these people. One of my sisters was in her 20s around the early 90s. And I suppose, like, that would be the when that sort of thing would be determined as far as who's going to speak for us. Jesus Christ. If that's the case, who would speak for me or us? When I was in my 20s, who was fucking popular in the music scene? It was like Creed. It was Maroon 5 hadn't even shown up yet. And I can't even remember. Like, that's how fleeting that all is. Like, it only shows up every once in a while. Like, these supposed legends of music and of generational voices in the mainstream media. Like, I don't even think we have that anymore. I think maybe in hip-hop they had, you know, Aaliyah died when I was in my 20s, early 20s. They had Tupac before that, Biggie. The Notorious Big. The Notorious B.I.G. And, you know, they, in their own scenes, they had been given the stature that they might not have given had they not have died young. And we haven't had that in a while. Huh. How about that? The funny thing about that, related to that, was I had read somewhere that Michael Stipe had taken Kurt Cobain, like, under his wing. And if you look on YouTube, there's a video of Michael Stipe at their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. And it's weird because Michael Stipe's up there, like, talking about how important Nirvana's music was, how important this was for not just changing the music scene, because there was this odd thing of, like, soft rock and 80s type music and metal, and then there's this grunge thing and that Nirvana was a big part of. And he says something like, oh, and that voice, what a voice, talking about Kurt Cobain. Like, really? That fucking guy who's like, gotta find a way to get away. That guy's got a great voice. Hey, sit down, Luciano Pavarotti. You ain't got shit on this guy screaming into a microphone. Just making the thing clip. Making the meters clip. Because, what a voice. This guy's not going to be singing standards. Even Rod Stewart, maybe didn't mean voice, like, as a timbre. Maybe he meant it as a message. Rod Stewart sings all these standards, trying to be Sinatra and shit. And he just sounds like this. I wish I know what I knew now. When I was younger. That shit. He's up there singing The Very Thought of You. Kurt Cobain wasn't going to be singing that stuff. The guy had a fucked up childhood, too. Okay, I'll leave it at that. Watch Montage of Heck. If you have an HBO Go, if you do HBO Now or any of that shit, pirate it. State restrictions may apply. Don't actually pirate shit. I'm not telling you to bring it up. It's probably on various Bay sites. Just to see some sort of idea, like, they weren't popular at all, and then suddenly they were popular. Like, that is the music culture. It's like, we all have to agree the only way that these guys can make money is if millions of people agree that this is the thing we're gonna listen to this year. That's like the dirty secret of the music industry. Like, we need hits. Like, no one's gonna make money, especially record labels, no one's going to make money unless we all agree, everybody in the country agrees, that this is the thing right now. And overnight, like, very quickly, I don't know if overnight, very quickly, this band had gone from relative obscurity, like, they had grown a presence in Seattle, and then suddenly, the entire country was behind them. And they're doing features for, like, Spin and Rolling Stone. And that just tells you how much things have changed. None of that shit matters. Who reads Rolling Stone? Is Spin even in business anymore? Does anyone read that stuff? Rolling Stone, their biggest thing now is, like, this... they try to do this legitimate journalism. And they have, like, now Matt Taibbi doesn't work for them, but Matt Taibbi was writing things about, like, the Bush administration and shit like that. And their latest thing was this UVA rape crisis. Is that it? The University of Virginia? And turns out, was, like, no one fact-checked this thing. Like, but, and it was all wrong, and has the damage been done, and whatever. But, you know, 20 years ago, it was huge. It was so important. If you weren't in Rolling Stone, you were nobody. And now does Rolling Stone even matter? I think I had a subscription to them for a year. And then it was like, fuck this shit, I don't give a shit. It was like a lot of cologne ads. That's one thing I remember about Rolling Stone magazine was cologne ads. Okay. I think that's enough for now. It's almost 6:30. I will leave it at that. I will make myself a meal. I will go listen to Joel's podcast. And I will talk to you all next time on the Dancast.